Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Sankofa Radio,
where we travel through,
through the past,
the present, on our way into the future.
Journey.
My man, I'm Ascari Donso, your host, with my main man, Sandiata, my co-host. And today we're talking about prison abolition. Peace, Sandiata.
Peace,
my brother. We're going to set the show off with a dedication in commemoration of the Black Panther Party, which is their 50-year anniversary this year. The Black Panther Party was formulated in September of 1966. Being in 2016, it's the 50th anniversary. I want to give a dedication to my main man, Geronimo Pratt. Geronimo Pratt was a soldier in the L.A. chapter. He was recruited by Bunchy Carter. He was a soldier in the L.A. chapter of the Black Panther Party. He was very instrumental in military tactics, revolutionary-type tactics and strategies. The brother was framed, charged with a murder he didn't commit. He spent 27 years in prison before he was exonerated. He was given a settlement, but that didn't make up for the 27 years that he spent behind the wall. Ultimately, he left the country when he got out. He still was an activist for prisoners, political prisoners. He died in Tanzania in 2011 from a heart attack. He was Tupac Shakur's godfather. He was a great man, man. And spent a significant portion of his life in the wall, fight because he wanted to fight for people's rights. So shout out to Geronimo Pratt. All right, so with that being said, man, Sandiata, what up, man? Yo, so prison abolition, man. Right now, you know, they got in the General Assembly a few bills, you know. They're talking about nonviolent prisoners. They're talking about releasing some nonviolent prisoners. They're still going with the political speak about violent crimes, even though some dudes committed violent crimes 3 decades ago.
Right.
I guess the best way to start this show off, man, is to ask you straight up, from your perspective, being in prison, what do you think is the real purpose of the prison versus what they tell us the purpose of the prison is?
Yes, sir. Well, and I'm going to be as objective as possible, but coming with my own personal experience and what I observed, to me, nowadays, maybe back in the 1800s, 1850s, 51, when the first penitentiary was built, it was built on the repentance and trying to allow the soul to ruminate and brood on its sinful acts and to come into a state of repentance where, you know, this time where you're reflecting on your sins and wanting to convert your life into a more Christian model. But those days are long gone, and now is simply about the dollar. If you ask me why, it's because, you know, numbers don't lie. And from what I see is my own experience with the criminal justice system was coming in a young, poor black male, didn't have proper representation. My case pretty much could have been, dismissed. Or a lighter sentence would have occurred had I had a paid attorney. But being that I had a court-appointed attorney, you know, they are still officers of the court. So, you know, they eat together, they break bread together, you know, converse together. And basically, my lawyer scared me. You know, as they do a lot of black men, you're going to get a lot of time, plead guilty, you don't have enough evidence to fight the case. Didn't even file for a motion to discover to really see the logistics behind my case, really see what was my exculpatory evidence. So, you know, they rushed, they just mass incarceration. They scare these youngins, get them in jail, get them in prison. And then, you know, they bombard them with all these different services that all cost money. You know, Keithy Commissary, one, Global Tail, another. And it's a big business. You know, it's a big business. I think it no longer has to do with trying to change a person's mind state, trying to extract the human potential out of that person through jail reflection. You know, now it's just about making money and capitalizing on the poor
warehousing the poor. So my man Billy, while we're talking about it, should be calling in today. good friend of mine, Carlton Weaver. He's going to help us discuss prison abolitionism ideas. But I want to until he calls in, I want to take it back, Sandiana. So I want to pose a question to you, my dude, because, you know, a lot of people probably like, these dudes getting on the internet week after week ranting and raving about how they done been victims of the system. When they going to take some damn responsibility for their crime? They ain't innocent, they ain't angels, you know what I'm saying? So what would you say to people who think that there's a need, that mass incarceration is serving a purpose? What would you say to them as far as, okay, how it is actually working, specifically, some specific ways that they're being exploited, their tax dollars, and why it is that they should be concerned about rehabilitation rather than retribution?
I'll give people the quote that I received from, that I read from a guy named Thomas More. He's a 1600 philosophy, and he was beheaded because of his political views. And he said, "Do not boast of your severity in punishing theft if you do not find a remedy for these evils. If you allow people to be brought up and their habits to be corrupted little by little from childhood, and if you then punish them for what their early training has disposed of them, what else is this, I ask, for first making them thieves and then punishing them for it?" Now, we know in our social, economical environment that we grow up in, there was a restriction of money. So a lot of times, you know, we adopt criminal ways to try to get money because our society mandates that we have money. Okay, when I say they, I'm talking about politicians, senators, governors, they make laws and pass laws and make contracts to spend billions of dollars to build these jails, these new age jails and these new age prisons. And these young youth, young black men who grow up poor, really don't have the education, they don't have the vocational training to really deal with society, this new change in society, or to even compete in the workforce. So really, you know, they have a disadvantage from start. And if the only solution is to just lock them up using the taxpayers' money, that's a crime to the poor. When you can use the same billions of dollars to build more schools, better schools, high-technologized schools with computers, like they'll spend millions of dollars on a new rabbit-eye camera in a prison when they can use this same technology to put in new-age computers. You know, to put in, no doubt, the nonviolent prison is that. And, you know, even with this whole violent, nonviolent thing, that's a divide and conquer tactic and strategy to me. Because, you know, a crime, there's levels, but I think that at the end of the day, some people did what they had to do, and the decisions that they made don't make them who they are.
Let me ask, Billy. Is Billy on the line? Is Billy, just
to check? Hey, guys, I'm here.
Okay. Billy, what's happening, man?
I've been listening.
My man.
Hi.
Yeah, so we're going to inject Billy in the conversation, man. Billy, man, we're talking about prison abolition, some of the so-called goals of prison.
Okay.
Full disclosure, my man Billy, man, is a white guy, thoroughbred, things on the system about social justice, and is just a really good human being. And so I want to ask you, man, bringing an interesting perspective to the table, what do you think is the goal of prison, and you know, the real goal versus what they say it is, and why is it that people should be concerned about actually reforming guys in prison? I'm going to hit you with the same question I hit Sandiata with.
Okay. The real goal, I don't think anybody knows what the real goal is. I think our system is in the state that it is in right now because people lack resolve. I don't think our government and the citizens in our society know how to respond to the criminal justice issue. And, you know, the criminal justice system we have has been around for 300-400 years. And, you know, we've wavered back and forth for trying this method and trying that method. And, you know, it doesn't seem like any method works. And ultimately, people become desensitized and frustrated, and, you know, they give up on people. That's generally what happens when you don't have success with anything. So I think what the state's pretty much done is just cut the losses. They said, well, some of these men are incorrigible. We can't help these guys. I mean, we've tried, and, you know, we give them parole. They become recidivists. we do this, they do that. So with what the other guy was saying, I kind of agree with him. They just try to figure out, you know, how can we save money? How can we make money? How can we reduce the cost of incarcerating all these men? So I just think we're in a helpless state. Nobody knows what to do, and we're just perpetuating the same thing that we've been doing for centuries, and we're just spinning in circles. So, you know, that's pretty much, I think, where we're at as a society and the criminal justice system.
Go ahead. So why should people be concerned about rehabilitating us? Why should people be concerned about putting us back out there?
Well, because 90% of the people that are incarcerated return to society. So that means that every man that you're going to lock up is going to return back to your society, and it's important that you make sure that the men come back out there and aren't going to, in fact, reoffend and be criminals. That's public safety. That's the whole issue, is about public safety. So if you want to make sure those men return with the skill set, like having training and having a job and being educated and not reoffending, then you got to provide them the means to become that type of person. And, you know, like Martin Luther King says, you know, anything that uplifts human personality is just. Anything that degrades life is unjust. And the system that we have is degrading. It doesn't use positive reinforcement to try to help people change. They're using negative means to try to coerce people to do the right thing. And history has proven that trying to force people to do things doesn't work. So it's either life affirming or it's life denying. This is a life denying environment. And, you know, we're just stuck. Nobody has an answer for anything.
Sure. Yes, sir. Billy, how you doing, bro?
Doing good. How are you?
I'm all right. I'm good, man. My name's Sunday Otto.
Okay,
what you're saying is on point. Yeah, no doubt. I want to ask you spoke about rehabilitation. It's a twofold question. Does the system rehabilitate a person? And if so, does this rehabilitation work? From your experience of being in prison, do you see proper rehabilitation, and does this work for a prison?
Well, no, my opinion is there is no rehabilitation. Absolutely not.
Yeah.
Any rehabilitation that happens is self-directed, is self-motivated.
Yeah.
Nobody's encouraging us to make necessary changes. There's no expectation for us, and that's, I think, where the missing link is that we get locked up, and we're being warehoused, like everybody understands, and they're just putting us in here and giving us these long-term sentences and expecting us to do the right thing, but we're not required to do the right thing. And what programs do exist, you know, are superficial at best. You know, they're just to make it seem like they're doing the right thing, but ultimately they're not really doing the right thing. So, no, I don't think there's any rehabilitation in prison. They eliminated that when they changed the laws, when they abolished parole. I mean, they pretty much abolished rehabilitation. They basically said that was a failed concept. So, there's no rehabilitation. And if you don't expect people to do the right thing, people aren't going to do the right thing. So
the listeners who don't know, can you go into detail as far as what were, before they changed the law, what year did they change the law? And for those who don't know, what programs did they have prior to this changing of the law?
Well, the laws were changed in 1995, and that's when parole was abolished.
Yeah.
And prior to that, you know, you had things going like the federal Pell Grant system, you know, allowing people to go and get a college education. You had far more academic programs and vocational training. You could take multiple vocational programs during incarceration, whereas you're only allowed to take one now. You just had more accessibility to volunteers from the public. You know, whether they were teaching music or teaching law. I mean, Georgetown Law School used to come to Augusta Correctional Center and help people there learn the law and become paralegals. It was just a more conducive environment to allowing people to pursue things, even if it was nothing more than doing arts and crafts and having unlimited accessibility to supplies to do things of that nature, all of which are no longer permitted, or if they are permitted, they're just barely permitted. So it was just an environment where they permitted prisoners to do more things. And now we're not allowed to do anything but, you know, sit in a building and deteriorate. So watch TV or play cards or something like that.
I want to jump in for a second and ask you a question, Billy, man, and Sundiana also. And, you know, you can probably answer it in that order. All of us was in Wallace Ridge, Red Onion. All of us, you know, experienced that torture. And we know that they spent almost $500 million building these prisons, and we ain't even talking about how much they spent to keep them open. Over the last almost 20 years now. You know what I'm saying? So from your experience up there, and this is important because we watching schools, school systems all throughout the state be underfunded, including at the university level. We watching poverty programs being destroyed. We watching government infrastructure just decay. So my question to you is, man, I noticed you had an incident up there where, you know, you tried to free yourself. Shout out to you for that. And I'm saying, what would you say? Well, no doubt. And what would you say? And what would you say, though? You know, is the truth about what goes on in these places versus what they say they are? And then we're gonna get into talking a little bit about alternatives on the next go round. But what would you say is the truth about what actually goes on in these super maximum security prisons versus what they tell in the world, man?
You want me to go, or Sandy? You want to go first?
Yeah, I'll go first. Well, for me personally, I think it was a culture shock on the correctional officers to have dealing with so many black men and going out there to that obscure rural area. They didn't know how to deal with us. So the first thing, you know, they used as a shield was fear, to shield their fear with anger and aggression. And but they used it under pretense of trying. We were the worst of the worst, and they had to exert some type of force. So, you know, there was a lot of corporal punishment, beating people. They were shooting people, all type of injustice, fake charges being trumped up on people, trying to bribe you out your rec. You know, once you're in long-term segregation, you only get 23 hours out, 23 hours in, 1 hour out the cell, and they would just refuse your rec, refuse you that 1 hour on petty things. So from my experience, you know, what they're telling people is a lie. Like, you know, they're about punishing the worst of the worst. But really, it was just guys up there on frivolous charges who sometimes was on level threes or level twos and got jumped all the way up to a level five and six who really wasn't supposed to be there, you know. And they was just misleading the people. You know, it was more of a intimidation factor. More of a torture house, for real, you know, from my experience.
Yeah, well, I totally agree with everything you said. I mean, you pretty much covered the basis. Yeah, I mean, you know, the message to the public was, you know, this was going to be a place for, you know, the worst of the worst. But like Santiago said, you had guys coming up there with 2 years or 1 year, and guys coming out of receiving that hadn't even done anything violent. People just getting drafted up there just to fill bed space because, you know, they built these places and told the public that they were needed. Reality, they weren't needed. They were creating jobs for Southwest Virginia. Not knocking that people need jobs. I'm just saying the pretenses were a lie. So they got guys up there, and they trained them to think that we're going to be these heinous, predatorial, violent people, which, again, is another, you know, falsehood. And when we got us up there on the top of a mountain in the middle of nowhere, all sorts of injustice ensued. I mean, Santiago already covered the bases, and there was no way for the people there to let people know what was going on. We were silent. Phone calls for $10 a call. People couldn't contact their families to tell them what was happening, and nobody seemed to care back then. It was terrible. Yeah. I mean, like you said, it was physical abuse and psychological torture. You know, destruction of property, threats of charges. You know, you name it. It was a heinous environment.
Yeah.
And it was absolutely torturous, and there was no relief, and there was no reprieve. And, you know, it just took time for enough people to realize that what was going on up there was, in fact, inhumane. And plenty of books have been wrote about it. You know, Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch, these people reported on these places, so it's not unknown what was going on out of sight, out of mind. But, it was just a way to create more prisons and create more jobs and under the pretext that there was these dangerous people, but that just isn't the case.
So, no doubt, really, if you can, man, you have 60 seconds remaining.
All right, rejoin the conversation because we still want to hear from you, man. To pick up on that, what I experienced up there, man, was racism. You know what I'm saying? I'm saying, there was some classes going on, but, bruh, the whiteys up there hate black people, man. That, to me, was shocking because, you know, I mean, real talk, because I had never experienced racism directly in my life, man. That was a time warp. You know what I'm saying? For me, for them to tell us things like, get off the sidewalk, boy, when I'm walking down, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Pull your pants up, boy, get you in the hole and call you a nigger. I mean, that's real,
that's
man.
Right.
And here I am, you know, I'm a 90s cat. This is the 2000s. You know what I'm saying? I'm thinking I'm in Mississippi in 1954. You know what I mean? So it was definitely, it's a lot of experiences. I seen dudes melt down in the hole. I seen dudes self-destruct, you know what I'm saying? Just their brains just fry. I seen a dude get dragged in the snow, right, by his cuffs, butt naked. You know what I'm saying? I'm literally dragged in the snow from outside of my window. I'm looking out the window. They got about 15 officers dragging this one man. You know what I'm saying? This is what Virginia taxpayers pay for. And it creates bitterness and resentment. It takes a lot of internal strength, spiritual development to be able to overcome the resentment, the bitterness, the sheer hatred and frustration that one can pick up for the state. For the body politic as a whole, who you can actually blame. But they're unconscious, too, and that's what the knowledge is about. So, you know, dealing with prison abolition until we get Billy back, I want to ask you, man, alternatives. Man, we done told the people the problem. They're spending money locking up poor people, warehousing us, capitalizing off us. Moving forward, how do we instruct the people, man? What can we tell people they can do, and for one, to be involved in criminal justice reform, and two, and I think we need a revolution more than reform, criminal justice revolution, how they can be involved, but also what it is that they need to know to be involved in that fight. Okay, that's the way I would say that.
Okay. Yeah, I think, no doubt, people mostly and primarily need to know their laws. People need to know their rights, and people need to know their ability. They need to know that they can petition the court, that they can call or go down to city hall or go down to these community meetings, city council, and speak with their local representatives to address these issues. You know, that you have so-called representatives who, you know, look into these issues at hand and to be more involved with their loved ones behind the wall because, you know, we still alive and they're not dead, you know. And once they know these laws and know their abilities, then they can use that force to change things, you know, to really anything, any law, you know, we can redress and propose this to be changed if we get enough petitions and enough people behind us. I think that's the main thing, just getting people aware, spreading them information, letting them know the atrocities going on, letting them know the stats, the numbers. And I think that's what really compels people more when they start to see these comparisons and see these numbers and where their money is going to and how their money is really not being used properly. Far as solutions, remedies, I think far as internally in the prisons, there needs to be a whole new revamp of the whole so-called rehabilitation system. If you ask me, which I know is quite radical and they probably won't do, but if they start to have classes in law, teaching individuals the law, teaching people about politics and social economics, teaching people or giving them vocational training, teaching them financial literacy. I think if you was to install these programs, especially law and so-called criminal justice, man, it would give a person a whole new insight because they will start to see how they were really a victim of society. You know, even though they did a crime, they may be considered a criminal, but the biggest crime was on the poor, you know. And a lot of times due to their social, you know, economic conditions or environment, that spurs them. So once they start to know and be informed of the sociological factors involved, I think that'll awaken a lot of people to not fall for the trap again. And just like Billy was saying, you know, I think that's probably why they started taking these, was a primary reason they started taking these programs out of the system in 95, because brothers were getting very intelligent when they started to read the law and started to learn more about politics, more about their rights and, you know, their laws and what they were capable to do and could do. You know?
That's right. So, Billy, you back?
Yeah, I'm back, guys.
All right, so the question was alternative. We talking alternatives now. You know what I'm saying? We talking what would you say to the people who may want to be involved in the criminal justice revolution that we need? What would you say to them as far as how they can get involved, what they can do? And what would you say as far as some alternatives to put on the table, some different ways to think about criminal justice moving forward?
Well, to echo what Santiago said, it's right. I mean, people need to become aware that just because we're locked up, we are still represented by, you know, our representatives. And same thing for our families. If something's going on here that they dislike, they have the same option to call their local senators or their local delegate or you know, collaborate with grassroots organizations or any other organization dealing with criminal justice issues to let people know how they feel or what's going on, to get involved, to become active. That's a responsibility that citizens still have, and that's a responsibility that we still have to let them know what they can do for us. You know what I mean? So that's a big thing. It's just raising awareness, talking about the issues, and just trying to, you know, bring more people together, common understanding, common needs, and just uniting people. As far as the alternative methods, you know, my idea is that, you know, this is an antiquated, outdated system, and it needs to be completely eradicated. In my mind, prisons need to be abolished, and alternative communities need to replace prisons. You know, you need to have an environment that simulates real society. In order to do all the things that people need to become a human being, you know, put them in a prison doesn't fulfill that goal. You need something that's going to reflect what normal life is. So, you know, the idea I've been writing about and already discussed with DP about is, you know, take something like a former decommissioned military base and you create an environment where everybody goes to this alternative community, you know, and you live just like a regular person. You pay taxes, you get minimum wage, you know, you have all these services that you have to attend. It's about treatment. Whatever the needs you have, they're identified based on individual needs. And we need to redirect the whole conversation away from always talking about what has been, and we got to responsibly start talking about what should be or what could be. No matter how far-fetched it may seem to some people, we need to start proposing solutions. And you know, that would be my idea. Start talking to people about new ideas instead of just saying, hey, this is, you know, these are the injustices going on. You know, qualify that with saying, well, this is how we might could change this. You know what I mean? And, you know, start putting a new model out there for people to talk about. You know what I mean? Because we got to redirect that conversation. And,
No doubt. So I know we've run out of time. So I think we all kind of give our last word. I'll set it off, and I'll make it brief. We got the campaign and the Virginia Department of Corrections. We banging on the process. They're killing us through the food. Half the people on Buckingham Correctional Center damn near have diabetes. We have over 400 men on a compound with 1,000 men that have diabetes, and most have gotten diabetes since they've been in prison. Food is horrible. Brothers are leaving with cancer. Cancer is a hidden epidemic in prison. We need people to support us. Go to Virginia citizens, excuse me, for better nutrition. File a complaint. Write me at Ascari Donso. Holler at Sankofa Radio. Let us know that you want to support and help. We'll get back with you immediately and tell you how you can help. Free all political prisoners. You got a lot of brothers in the tombs. Wallace Ridge, Red Onion, being shipped out of state because they banging on this system, y'all. They need your support. Become aware, man. Help us out. Help the community grassroots organizations that's trying to make change. Billy Santiago.
Yes, sir. I want to say, man, thank you guys. Thank you, brothers. I want y'all to keep y'all head up. Billy got some amazing ideas. And for everybody who's listening out here on the outside, really take heed of what these guys are saying. Let's start holding our representatives, senators, delegates, hold them responsible, you know, and keep that fire on them to do what they need to do. Because if we voted them in, then they should take heed of what we're saying. And we all have loved ones behind the wall. And let's support them and come with some more positive solutions.
Billy,
you got something
to say? Yeah, okay, hey, all right. Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys. It's been really cool. I appreciate what y'all are doing, and appreciate anybody listening and, you know, showing some concern and compassion for, you know, for prisoners' rights. And, what DP saying, there's a lot of bad things going. I think people need to write to Secretary of Agriculture about the food situation. You know, take it all the way to the top, you know, because it's really bad up here. But, yeah, just keep fighting.
I would encourage people out there, man, to keep your spirits up, stay hopeful, man. You know, the future is bright, you know what I'm saying? At the end of the day, man, optimism is a weapon. You know what I'm saying? Positive thinking is a weapon. You know what I'm saying? We're dealing with thought control, mind control. They're trying to beat us through the food. They're trying to beat us through our mind. When I say they, I want to make sure I put a picture to that. I'm talking about the ruling elites, those corporatists who have an interest in all of this, whether it is defunding schools, whether it's building corporate prisons, these economic centers, whether it is shipping jobs over.